Welcome to Spider-Man and his amazing fans. I'm Jason.
I'm Bri Guy.
All right, Brian, here we go. We've come to the end of this.
Yeah.
We did the whole thing.
We did all 65 episodes
of the
Spider-Man 94.
Spider-Man, colloquially referred to as the animated series.
Right. Yep.
And yeah, 65 episodes altogether. It's this constitutes what? This like almost three times as many as each of the previous two series we looked at.
Right.
So a lot of ground covered.
Yeah, five seasons worth.
A lot of episodes made. Yeah.
A lot of story arcs. I feel a little tired with all of the things right. that we've watched. Like, I don't know if it feels different for you to watch like an episodic thing where it would be like 65 completely standalone mm-hmm. episodes as compared to like these longer story arcs we got, but it feels like a different experience to me. I don't know about you.
Yeah. You're saying like different than if Amazing Friends had run for 65 episodes,
exactly.
would that have been like? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. No. Where there wasn't there weren't like story arcs within mm-hmm, it. It was mm-hmm. just, you tune in one week, you watch it,
right.
villain of the week, and then line up the next one.
Yeah. 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 No, I feel like that would be tough. That would be tough.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure you can point to, favorite TV shows in your past, but like mm-hmm. when you say that, like the first thing that pops into my head is the X-Files. Which was a favorite of mine. Kind of a contemporary of this cartoon.
Yeah, true.
You notoriously had the quote unquote the freak of the week episodes of X-Files.
Sure.
And then you had the conspiracy or the continuity sort of episodes, you know? So there was like like a thread running through everything, but you didn't get those every week, and you didn't get the one-offs every week. It was a mix. I think when you're talking about a show that runs for this long, for this many years, regardless of how many episodes we're talking about, you've got to have a mix of those things, I feel, to keep the audience engaged. Because I would think after a while, if every story stands on its own, you're just kind of going to get bored because things are going
right.
to get retread,
there's
right?
No stakes. Mm-hmm. And there's no stakes. There's no, like, you always know it's going to be fine at the end of the 22 minutes of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you also want to get new people to be able to tune in. So mm-hmm. it kind of rides that balance.
I
feel like there really was a good balance of to be continued story arc episodes. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I like that freak of the week. I always call it like the sort of, you know, this week's baddie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. But yeah, it just feels like kind of a different experience. And especially now, I don't really know of any shows, at least that I watch, where each episode is self-contained. Everything now is part of a larger story.
For
right?
sure. Yeah. Yeah. I assume somewhere that, you know, it's probably on CBS
that there's still, probably running right now as we record this
still
episode.
Producing television that yeah. way, but it's not very popular anymore, is it? No,
and it probably has a theme song that ends with dun dun. If I had to guess, I know that's not on CBS, but those types of shows,
yeah.
you know, the dun dun shows, as I call them, the procedurals, I think is the word.
Sure.
You know, where you can jump in and go, oh my god. Someone did that to someone. I hope they catch him.
Right.
They caught him. That's basically it.
Phew.
Ooh, close. And boy, that was intense in that courtroom. I'm glad I'm not that defendant, is what you say. There's a market for it. I mean, Law and Order is what I'm referencing. It's probably been on for 20 seasons, Jason. So
yeah,
you know,
all the various laws and all of the orders. Yeah, yeah.
All of the orders, all of the lawfulness. Yeah.
Seriously, just the little sidebar here.
Yeah.
I can remember being in high school watching the original Law and Order. Like,
okay.
I watched the first two or three seasons of the original Law and Order. I remember when
Jerry Orbach.
Before that, when Paul Sorvino was on the show.
Right.
Yeah.
I totally forgot about that.
Holy
cow.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's going 30 years back, my friend.
Yeah. 488 episodes, by the way. Started in 1990. So if you want to binge some, should we do a Law and Order podcast after this?
I'm sure someone has already got it going on, Brian.
They're probably caught up.
300 episodes ahead of us already.
Yeah, 480. I think that might be as many episodes as like a daytime drama. Like that, just right behind General Hospital.
Yeah, at this point. It's getting there. Oh boy.
But yeah, I just feel like landscape of TV now, at least the stuff that you and I and our sort of demographic is watching.
Yeah,
maybe didn't really find like a lot of similarity with all of the Spider-Man we watched up until this point. Like this,
yeah,
this series that we watched probably felt more like a contemporary show than the other two. And it also felt less like a Saturday morning show. I don't know if you'd agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there were absolutely times where this show felt very grown up, not necessarily in terms of the content, but in terms of like the complexity and thematically, they did a really nice job there. And, you know, honestly, a big part of that has to come from the attention that was paid throughout to what was happening in the pages of the comic books, right?
Agreed.
Because I feel like, and I'm seriously shooting from the hip here, so either someone has already said this a million times or it's way off base, but I feel like comic books as like a medium kind of grew up with Spider-Man, you know, where like in the 60s they were for kids, you know,
for kids
like,
and young teenagers.
Yeah. And as you know, readers matured but kept reading, stories matured in comics, where now, you know, it isn't necessarily that kids can't get into Spider-Man today, but you're going to find things in those pages that are compelling for adult readers as well. And you're going to find a lot more. And I think, just like I said, in comics in general, you find these days a lot more mature lines of comic books being written and put out than there were 30, 40 years ago. You think that's accurate? Yeah.
I do agree. And I also think we live in a time now where we didn't have Marvel movies when this show came out, right? So we didn't have a Marvel Cinematic Universe like exists now. So someone can now watch the movies, watch these old TV shows, and know that it's a different universe than what they're going to read in the pages of a comic book.
Sure.
Whereas when this show in the mid-90s was new to the airwaves, all they had to pull from was the comic books. You know what I'm saying? So they had 30 years ish because it started in 62 and this started in 94, so 32 years of material to pull from, and that was it. Whereas if you and I were like, let's make a Spider-Man show right now, they'd be like, okay, live action or animated? Okay, what universe is it in? Spider-Man's universe. No.
Right.
Cinematic universe or, or comic book.
Like, do you want to start a whole new one? You know, like just pick a random number, you know?
Or do you want to go into the Spider-Verse? Because we've been doing that a lot lately. Mm-hmm. So it's just kind of a different time. But I think, you know, it's no surprise that you and I, and I think most people are going to hold this Spider-Man series that we just finished up on a higher pedestal for certain. For me, nostalgia aside, it's been my favorite that we've watched so far.
Sure.
Nostalgia because I had a huge nostalgia for Amazing Friends. But I think it is better because of them pulling from the comic books.
Yeah.
Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. I think cannot go wrong by going to that that well of original stories. And, you know, that's another thing that I don't know. It would be great. It would be great, actually, if a friend of the show, Sean McKeever, was here to speak to it a little bit. But like, it also seems like here in the present day, titles churn through writers a lot faster than they did back in the day
on the comic pages.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Agreed. Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, you might have a writer who's on a book for 9, 10, 12 months, something like that. And that's their whole run on that. And each writer kind of might have their own little take or little story that they want to tell with those characters. Whereas at the time this is produced, you had longer running people who those were their characters and they were they were they knew them really well. They they connected pieces through through all the years and through all these different stories together. And what they did in this series that was smart was they recognized that, well, that's the real Spider-Man. That's the canon Spider-Man,
yeah,
and that's the one we want to put on the screen. You
right,
know?
And it's what people wanted to see,
mm-hmm.
especially because it had. I mean, there's a pretty big gap between Amazing Friends and this, right? Like, didn't we say like 12 years?
12 years or so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. So I think people really were excited when something like this existed
mm-hmm.
because all they had in it was the comic books. And,
yeah.
you know, it's funny because so much stuff happened in the comic books between 82 and 94. We could have a whole other
mm-hmm.
episode about that. But that's when I started reading comics. You
yeah,
know,
when, yeah, early 90s, was, yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. well, yeah, I mean, I do remember the black suit, so it might have been more like the late 80s after Secret Wars.
Yeah.
But I just remember, even though I didn't really watch this show as much, I had nostalgia as I was watching it because I think it was so close to the comics.
Sure, because you had read those stories. You knew that.
Yeah,
you knew
exactly.
The, yeah, you picked up on that right away, yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right.
No, you know, that's something where, as I'm jumping around a little bit here, excellent service to the long devoted fans,
yep.
which again, just throughout the series, they did a nice job with that. And even where in the finale, like I had the finale, the Spider Wars arc in my top five arcs or episodes of the show, mm-hmm. because I feel like they really kind of bent over backwards to try to give Spider-Man at the end of this series like a really good send off and leave him in a better place than they found him, you know?
Yeah, I think so.
And I think I really feel like they had the fans in mind when they did that. So
I think so. And yeah. I think it's fresh in our memories. It wasn't that long ago. We talked about this whole series finale, but I think mm-hmm. probably one of the best nods to fans was that last shot with Stan Lee.
Mm-hmm.
Now we kind of just assume, well, until he passed away, we just kind of always waited to see Stan Lee's cameo in every Marvel Cinematic Universe movie.
Right.
So we kind of take that for granted. But back then I imagine that was like the fanboys going, oh, well, they probably were like, I just saw him at a con last weekend in Cleveland. And now he's on my TV screen, kind of sort of animated. So,
yeah, yeah.
You know, what else was Stan Lee doing in 1998? I mean, was he still on like the board at Marvel, you think?
I don't know. I don't know at that time. Cause you know, I mean, the other thing about this series that I don't really have the knowledge to get into it too deeply, but this late 90s time period was kind of when Marvel Comics was sort of bottoming out financially,
yeah.
you know, and
crazy to think of that, right?
And where they were selling off their best intellectual property like Spider-Man and X-Men mm-hmm. and Fantastic Four to the highest bidders in Hollywood,
right.
because they needed money. And yeah,
yeah.
Can you, I mean,
it's
the
crazy
the turnaround is just insane.
I know. I mean, basically any franchise that's owned by Disney, they're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say so.
So it's crazy. Yeah.
But so I can imagine he was probably you know, around, but maybe not making many decisions. But
yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, I do agree. A lot of good fan service done in this, and I think, like we said, a lot of that comes from just pulling from the comic books. And
mm-hmm.
it was kind of fun when we were watching these, because on their wiki page you can, you know, read the synopsis and it tells you which ones are based on comics and which
yeah.
issue it's based on. And you mm-hmm. could get together. I mean, if you really wanted to get deep into this and push the glasses up here and get nerdy about it, you could make a really good reading list just based on these,
yeah,
on these
for sure.
episodes
for sure.
and what they base them on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
so someone that's listening can do that and you can report back to us
right.
if you would like.
Right. Oh man. No. And, you know, speaking of that, I think it's notable too, that they, they seem to have had a solid plan. If they didn't have a solid plan for a number of seasons right out of the gate,
mm-hmm.
they did a good job of faking it, because I mean, you look at some of the episodes from season one. We're talking about establishing like very early, we've said before, Mount Rushmore villains for Spider-Man that are
yeah.
based on, like, you know, episode one is based on Amazing Spider-Man 6. And we've got,
right, exactly, we've got, very early. Yeah.
We've got the Dr. Octopus loosely based on Amazing Spider-Man 3, you know, or, and then we have some that are into the teens and 20s, and it's like, you know, that's really early stuff, but it does, it they do a good job of giving us those classic characters on screen, and some that were, you know, like we saw, did we see Lizard in Amazing Friends? No. Lizard was in Spidey 81.
81, yeah.
Really, that Lizard episode in Spidey 81 was just kind strange. Of ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really weird. And then there was the Kraven episode in Amazing Friends where you remember Firestar was like
kind of,
really
kind of into him, right?
Yeah, hot and bothered for Kraven, which was that felt odd. You know, I thought that the treatment of these villains. Oh, and Mysterio too. Mysterio and Amazing.
Yeah, that was really weird.
I can't remember if it was Amazing Friends or if it was Spidey 81. But the disco thing where he was going to give everybody disco fever.
That's right. That was Spidey 81.
That was Spidey 81. Some weird
disco fever spread throughout New York City in that one. Let's just start over. Let's just watch that again, Jason.
There were just some odd choices with classic villains in previous series where here
the Spider Boogie,
where they really seem to go out of their way to treat everybody as best they could.
Agreed.
And
some of the voice characterizations weren't great in this.
Yeah.
We've talked about that before, but for the most part, the way they were animated, the way that they were treated, and again, the faithfulness to the comics,
mm-hmm.
I'd say it was great for the series.
So that kind of just leads me into one of my bottom three.
Oh, sure.
which was, and you know, we harped a lot on the vampire stuff.
Yeah, we sure did.
On the treatment of Morbius because their hands were kind of tied in terms of the Saturday morning standards and what do they call that? The standards and practices.
Right.
You know, so that was tough. And so it always made us question, why are we doing this? You know, why are we kind of beating our head against a wall? I mean, I can understand what Morbius, what the purpose he served in the Neogenic Nightmare, which is like where the most of the Morbius stuff was,
right?
You know,
right.
I mean, he tied in and kind of paralleled what was happening to Peter in that arc, and I was like I said, I'm reflecting on this whole series, and I'm going, okay, I understand,
you seem in a better place about Morbius than you were.
I was like, you did the best you could with the Morbius.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. But then the thing was, I had to put on my bottom three. You woke up the Man Bat in season 4, and it was in. And I was like,
yeah.
You could have just left him in that cave. You didn't have to do that. Like,
right. Right.
Like you had shuttled him off. That was fine.
Yeah. He didn't need to come back, and he didn't serve any purpose, right? Other than to tell where Felicia Hardy had been.
It seems like it was pretty much to take Felicia off the board at that time and make room for MJ to come back. And that's another thing we talked about a lot, was that we would have loved to have seen instead like a conflict, not necessarily between those two female characters, but within Peter/Spider-Man about, you know, with his feelings for these two women, which, you know, is maybe a little bit heady for Saturday morning TV, but.
And there were moments where I didn't know who Peter was really going. I mean, of course, it's going to be MJ. It's always been MJ, but there were moments with the way that they wrote Black Cat, Felicia Hardy,
mm-hmm.
that I really thought, oh, that maybe this will be a real, like, active story arc.
Yeah.
And like, you know, maybe it'll be a real decision that Peter has to make.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it just, the biggest head scratcher, and I didn't rank the episodes, or I didn't make a bottom or a top three, but if I had to,
mm-hmm.
I would put, like, of the bottom three, two of them would be Morbius. And then Rocket Racer would be in there too. Like, that would be my bottom three.
I think
you're being more forgiving than I expected you to be, and probably more forgiving than I would be, Jason, because I don't know what purpose he served even in the Neogenic Nightmare, mm-hmm. because there was enough story with Neogenic Nightmare that whole season with, mm-hmm. Man Spider.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, so I hear you. I hear you.
But yeah, why bring it back? And really, why Blade? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm, like, you know, we can look at this in 2024 and go, well, Blade was big because of the Blade movie, but that was like 5 years after this.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Why? Mm-hmm, you know, and on a Saturday morning cartoon where you can't show blood and you can't say, you know, biting a neck and sucking blood.
Yeah.
So you have plasma suction cups on your fingers as you do as a vampire. You know, why?
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, so, the leech hands. We'll be forever haunted by the leech hands.
I know. Yeah. I know. I know. Come for the Spider-Man, stay for the leech hand, folks.
Oh, boy. Well, let me tell you some of my other top five.
I'll see if I agree.
You can see how you feel about some of these. I think we mentioned I did put the final Spider-Wars arc in my list. I will say about that, you know, as we were kind of researching and reading a little bit for those finale episodes, we ended up looking at some of the interviews and things that happened around the 25th anniversary of the series, right?
Yeah,
from a few years back.
87. Oh, 25th anniversary of the series.
Right, yeah. But it was like 5 years ago in present day. It was like, what was it, like 2018 or something, where they were, where Semper and the cast were like doing the con panel circuit bit. You know, reading some of those interviews, it was surprising to me that there was a significant swath of fans who were really disappointed that we didn't actually see Peter and MJ get back together at the end of the finale. Well, one of the things that again was surprising to me in those interviews is that John Semper himself said, "Boy, we really thought we nailed it. We didn't think we needed to do that."
But it was something that
stuck in certain fans' craw, so to speak.
Is there any way it could have been? I mean, with what we saw at the end of the last episode, was there any doubt in your mind that he was going to find MJ?
No.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
And I guess
so. Maybe I don't know why you have to be that, you know, that clear. You can be a little ambiguous.
Well, I think that's one of the things that maybe just comes with, you know, comes as part of being old and seeing like lots of TV shows. And it's like, it's not, you don't always get every single thing tied up in a bow and handed it to you, you know. Like you've got to infer some stuff when you're having a series conclusion. And I thought they did a nice job there. My number one, Brian, was still the season three finale, Turning Point. This is where Spidey fights Green Goblin, and not only that, it was just the emotional weight of that episode where both Spidey and Peter were in such peril through the whole thing, because he knew that Norman knew that he was Spider-Man, and that dinner party scene was so good, where crazy Norman was kind of egging him on, you know, sort of needling Peter about Spider-Man. So
in front of
good.
Harry, I think. Right?
Yes.
Harry. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And such angry good stuff. Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And he gets angry at Madame Web at the end.
Very upset.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh huh.
Yeah, yeah. Good choice.
I mean, like I said, the action in that episode with the fights with the Goblin, and then obviously the loss of MJ at the end. It's a gut punch, man. That was one of those, to me, one of those few like good enough for grown-up TV sort of stories that was in this show. You know?
And I don't remember us in general loving the whole Sins of the Fathers story arc as much as Neogenic Nightmare. Is that safe to say?
You know, I'd have to go back and look again at some of the closer at a few of those episodes. I don't know.
We got Carnage and Venom inside of the Sins of the Fathers, which was pretty cool.
Okay.
Venom came back, I should say. But then we also get things like Tombstone and Rocket Racer. So, it's kind of hard to, I don't know. I think my point was, it's pretty impressive that it's something that you remember and you remember fondly, considering that the whole Sins of the Father story arc might not have been as memorable. They just really nailed the ending. probably better ending than Neogenic Nightmare, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, and as I think back, I feel like I remember with Neogenic Nightmare being so sort of tightly woven together episode by episode, you know, where they didn't necessarily continue one after another, but the events in each episode really, really significantly affected the next one, right? I remember feeling like by the time we got to the end of season two, I was like ready for it to be over. Right. I was like, I'm really worn out from this nightmare. Whereas yeah. Sins of the Father was, it was sort of a looser theme, and there was room for kind of for some different stories to be told that mm-hmm. sort of generally followed a thread, but didn't necessarily all have to be tied really closely together. Sins of the yeah. Fathers had Daredevil too. There was that Daredevil.
Oh, yeah.
Was that a two-parter? Yeah, I think that was a two-parter. Yeah.
And we got some good, speaking of Law and Order, mm-hmm. we got some good courtroom stuff there, right? That's
yeah.
how we, yeah. yeah, it was framed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that, I think, you know, looking back, that probably was a decent story arc. I just remember kind of like, at this point, we might've been a little frustrated with Mary Jane and just mm-hmm. wanted mm-hmm. more of her. But
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Continue on with your ranking, though. I'm enjoying this. Yeah, so far, no, I agree sure. with you.
You know, I will say another kind of random thing that I thought of as I was looking back on these episodes. I was really disappointed at the end that we never saw Doctor Strange come back. He was in that first episode of season three.
Sins of the Fathers, yeah.
Yeah, and he gives that sort of foreboding comment at the end of the episode where he's like, there's some other power at play here that's really that I can't even, you know, wrap my head around or, you know,
begin
obviously paraphrasing.
Right.
And,
right.
But and of course it's Madame Web. I really felt certain when that season three happened that we were going to see more of Doctor Strange, and he never came back.
And he was handled really well too. Speaking mm-hmm. of how they handled characters, I remember really actually liking him a lot mm-hmm. in this. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that it would have been really cool to have him pulled into Secret Wars.
Yes. Yes. That would have been a good place for him.
Instead mm-hmm. of someone. We already talked about our dream team, but I didn't even think of him.
Right. Right.
On the chess board, but would have been cool to have him come back there.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, I agree with that. What are the others in my top five? Oh, here's one where I had to cheat a little bit to get all like five that I really liked. So I lumped all three of the Hydro Man episodes together, even though they're not in the same yeah. season.
Those would have been in my top five as well. You're talking even the one from just this last season too, then, right?
Right. I'm talking. There was the two-parter in season five, and there was his first appearance, which I think that's season three, right?
Yep, season three, episode three.
Yeah,
and actually, that is Neogenic Nightmare.
Oh,
season
okay.
two, episode season three. Two. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah. So that one. So the first Hydro Man goes way back, season two. We don't see him again until later, but I appreciated so much these episodes where Mary Jane's character really, I mean, in that first one in season two, I think we both recognized how much she kind of blossomed and got to open up and get it gave her a lot more depth and nuance. And then obviously how surprising, I should say, it was in season five for her to turn out to be a clone and you know, share the Hydro power.
Right.
Was just, I mean, that, yeah, that was just, both sides of that were really, really good.
Yeah. And it really does make for an interesting character that he's just kind of obsessed with Mary Jane. It's an unrequited lover / stalker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Situation. And that's creepy. I mean, that's
yeah, for sure. For sure.
It's funny. We're talking about the show where we see lizards and octopi and, you know, vampires, but we're like, oh, that guy's kind of creepy. The guy that
yeah.
didn't really take no for an answer on the date.
Yeah.
He's creepier than any of that.
Oh, you know? Yeah, for sure.
Do you know anything about the Hydro Man character? If he's in any of the comics, did we talk about this already?
I mean, we probably did, but I don't remember.
Yeah, it looks like he is.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
He appeared in Spider-Man. He started pretty early in the Amazing Spider-Man run.
Gotcha.
So he's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. Cooler than Aquaman. but creepier than anything else.
Yes, yes. And I think we probably talked when Hydra Man first appeared too. You know, they at the time that this series was airing, there was it James Cameron who was developing a script?
Yeah. Yes,
for Spider-Man a Spider-Man movie where he wanted to, where he was going to use Sandman in that in that movie. Semper wanted to use Sandman but went with Hydra Man instead. I think I think it worked out for the better personally. Yeah, you know.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, who knows? Was Sandman ever mentioned in this universe then?
Not in this one, no.
I didn't think he was. I would have been curious to see how they did, but yeah, I like how Hydra Man wasn't just a villain of the week. Mm-hmm. He was kind of more of an instrument to propel Mary Jane's story forward.
Yeah.
Significantly, especially in that last appearance where, like you said, okay, now that's where we found out about the kidnapping, right? Like where she had been was there. Mm-hmm. So that was that was one of my favorite episodes too, because I had given up the ghost and I had thought, we're never going to find out about this kidnapping, are we? And then they pulled that trick. So that was very
Cool. Another one of my top five goes all the way back to season one, the alien costume arc.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Of course, you know, you got to bring in Venom in this time frame, and you know, and we get the black costume, and I do remember like being bummed out that the symbiote got like shot back into space right away.
Pretty soon, yeah.
But you know, of course, they had him return, and it was a satisfying reunion, so to speak, when he came back, and Carnage was sort of spawned as well. But I remember particularly the like part one of the alien costume where they have like the space shuttle crash on the bridge and stuff like that. And I remember that was the first moment in this series where I was like, where it felt really cinematic, where it was almost like a edge of your seat sort of opening to that thing, you know, and the
right, very exciting.
It really was. It really was. And it mm-hmm. kicked it off in a exciting way. And obviously the whole arc of Peter dealing with his relationship with the symbiote is fun to see on screen. I will say this, the alien costume arc in the animated series here, better than Spider-Man 3, the Sam Raimi.
Agreed. And from what I've heard, probably better than the standalone Venom movies that have come out in recent years too.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprising to me.
I don't know what happened with Spider-Man 3, but I was really excited for Venom to be brought into that universe. And the way they made him look was pretty cool and creepy, but the way they treated that character you're right. They did it better here.
Yeah.
And he comes back later, right? In the, is that in the,
I think
Sins
that's
of the
in
Fathers?
Season 4. No, it is season 3. Venom returns in chapter 10. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. And I remember that episode being pretty good too.
Yeah.
I don't know
if
I remember much from it, but I remember just liking it. So I think Venom must have been treated really well.
Yeah.
Carnage too. Not that it's in your top five and not to get too far off the rails here, but appreciate how Carnage was used in this?
Yes.
In this run?
Yes, absolutely. I can, as I think back, I definitely remember, you know, when we talk about creepy villains and like the creep factor, the creep factor to me is really important. Like even as I'm thinking through this top five, my number one is where Norman is super creepy at that dinner party.
Yeah, that's right.
Hydro Man is where I forget the his real name, doesn't matter, but super creepy,
super
stalker.
Creepy. Yeah.
Carnage what's his name? Cassidy, Cletus Cassidy.
Yep.
Super creepy when he's
scary.
When he's blowing up that building and stuff. Yeah. The whole thing. Pretty wild. So and Eddie Brock really well done in here too. Just like he's and that's something I remember from that alien costume arc as well. Just that they really did a good job of showing like how unraveled he was getting and how jealous he was of, or not jealous, I'm sorry, how much he blamed Spider-Man for everything that had gone wrong for him.
That was well done.
Good work, people. Yeah.
Way to go, Semper. I know he's listening and we approve.
The last one in my top five, and this too is to not necessarily all connected, but that the Black Cat arc from season 4.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to mention this because you loved Black Cat. I did too, mm-hmm, just in this mm-hmm. whole thing. Yeah.
And it was, you know, we talked a lot about how much it was great to see stories well interpreted from the pages of the comic books and characters and arcs brought forth from that medium. This is the biggest departure that they had, right? Because Black Cat in this universe is a hero. She is a villain in the comic books.
Like, absolutely.
They decided to go a different direction here, and I think that they just knocked it out of the park. Like, it was her origin story in this show was awesome, with the tie-in with her dad and Captain America and that whole the super soldier program, and then the chemistry that she and Spider-Man have the whole time is just, it's palpable, Brian. It's palpable.
It is. You can taste it. Mm. Yeah. And it could have really been a miss with how they really changed, how much they changed with Black Cat mm-hmm. from the comics into the series. It really could have not worked. And it really shouldn't have worked. mm-hmm. But it did. You know, the whole Captain America thing, like on paper, that sounds wackadoo, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, her
yeah.
dad was like a burglar and saw something photographic
memory. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, that could have really just been a miserable failure, but it really worked. And I think it worked so well because you cared so much about her chemistry, like you mentioned with Spider-Man, Peter Parker.
Yeah.
That you wanted to know more about her.
Mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
you, and like you and I think we're both, as the kids say, shipping Black Cat and Spider-Man being a thing.
Right. Right.
You know what I mean? So that says a lot, because I don't think we would have read the comics and felt the same way.
Probably not. Probably not. Do you, I'm shooting from the hip here again. Do you think that the way that they used Felicia Hardy throughout the earlier part of the series, that probably had a pretty big effect on how we the viewers reacted to Black Cat, right? Because we knew Felicia so well.
I think ahead that's of time. I think that was, we probably didn't notice it at the time because mm-hmm. it was kind of subliminal.
Yeah.
A little
yeah.
subtle. But yeah, mm-hmm. you're right. It we had more skin in the game at that point because we cared about Felicia.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
We weren't like by Felicia, as the kids say. I'm still hip, right. Jason. All these references.
Yeah, yeah. They're amazing, Brian. I
know. I mm-hmm. thank you. I'm not in my 40s at all.
So do you want to talk through my bottom three as well? We already talked about Morbius.
Yeah. Is it just Morbius, Morbius, Morbius?
No,
is that your bottom three? Okay. Yeah, by all means.
But you also brought up Rocket Racer in season
that would
three.
Be my bottom three. Yeah.
And this is, it definitely bears repeating. It's not so much that the Rocket Racer episode, like the story or the way it was told or whatever, that it is awful. I really think it's the fact that it just does not hold up in the, you know,
yeah.
considering the 30 years of race relations that have passed now since this, and particularly I think in like a post 2020 America, like,
yes,
it's right. really hard to swallow a show that is like propping up these cliches in the name of like a progressive perspective, you know,
right, and trying to be like representation.
Yeah, yeah,
but it's bad. Stereotyping representation.
Yeah, yeah. it's like I said it's not that they did a terrible job making an episode, it's that it's so hard to watch now. Here's one that the kids say, it's soup's cringe.
It is not Rivets. It's very mid. I have friends with teenagers, Jason. Yeah, it just, and it's really, it definitely made us uncomfortable as two older white men,
yeah.
you know, that lived through the 90s.
Uh-huh.
It made us pretty uncomfortable having to even talk about it. Like, mm-hmm. like you said, though, the character Rocket Racer, kind of compelling, kind of interesting. It just was, you could almost hear the writers saying, well, we should probably show people of color. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yes, we haven't done that yet. We should mm-hmm. probably do that.
Yeah.
It's always a bad idea if you're not a person of color.
Right.
To write about people of color.
Yes. Always a bad choice. always
but
a bad choice.
But in 1997, I guess they didn't know that yet. So
yeah, I'm sure at the time I said something about, like, you know, kicking their heels up on the desk and going, racism solved.
We solved racism. Just like milk, it's all good.
Oh God!
I don't know what episode that's in, but that might be my favorite phrase of the whole series.
The last one of my bottom three was season 4, episode 1. It was the Robbie Robertson focused episode where he goes to jail, and I mean some of the things about it were just really wacky to me. Like, that, you know, it was this breakneck legal pace, you know, where he was like, you know what, it was like Back to the Future too, where, do you remember where the kids in the future, they're tried, convicted, and sentenced within 4 hours of you know. It was about the same with Robbie, you know. It was just
right.
It was that was really weird. But then I, looking back and reflecting on it a little more, I remember too, like, that is the episode immediately after that turning point one where MJ disappears. Yeah. It's just such a steep departure from the moment we just left.
Right.
To then shift to this, and where there's, like, Spider-Man does stuff in this, but, like, it's mostly about Robbie.
Right.
And it was a weird episode that just seemed out of place, and I seem to remember at the time us wondering, what are we doing here? Like, what are they trying to accomplish with this?
Yeah. Right. And I feel like, if I remember correctly, Spider-Man doesn't even really talk about Mary Jane being gone for that long.
No.
It's like in the first minute of the fourth season, or the first season of the fourth episode. And then you're right, it becomes a very Robbie Robertson-centric episode. I think if I had to think of a lot and harder, and as hard as you did, about my least favorite episodes, I think a lot of them would probably have one thing in common, is that the focus was not on Spider-Man. And this is a really good example of that, I think.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. I'm trying to think of, like, non-Spidey-centric episodes that I did like, and nothing is popping up to me right away. No,
even like that backdoor pilot of the X-Men episode. You know, it's kind of hard to stay focused when we're there for Spider-Man.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So those are my bottom three. It was, you know, overall, it obviously has been an enjoyable series. Another thing that just kind of pops to mind for me is that, and this is just a comment, Kingpin was like the big bad through the whole series.
Yeah, pulling the strings.
He was always pulling the strings. I notice that we just never really got sick of him, right?
Yeah, you're right. We wanted more of him, I think.
We never said, oh, here's Kingpin again. Like, Kingpin's involved, you know.
Right,
it
right.
was.
It wasn't like Morbius.
Right. Right. No. They did a nice job, I think, justifying vast majority of his appearances.
I agree.
And I feel like they put him together too in a way that it just made sense. And they propped him in that, you know, his Crime Central building or whatever, and the things that happened there, like, usually just made sense.
Yeah.
There was, and he had some fun moments that I'm remembering now, that Hobgoblin two-parter where we, like, actually got to see Kingpin fight, which was pretty fun.
And they did a good job making him like a typical Spider-Man villain, in the sense that he was, you know, not super, super scary. I'm thinking of, like, the Vincent D'Onofrio version of the Kingpin, which we have now, which is, like, very, very sinister.
Yeah,
in a great way. I love his performance. But, like, Kingpin here felt like he was ripped from the comic book pages as well, but also a very formidable foe. Like, not just a villain of the week that Spider-Man could, you know, vaguely punch into jail. You know what
right,
I mean?
Right, yeah.
He had an overarching thing going on, and a threat every time to Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I liked his was it the Sinister Six that he was in charge of, or the Insidious Six?
The Insidious Six, yes,
yeah,
yes.
I liked all of that too. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I don't know any other stuff that has popped to mind for you that you feel is important to think about or look back on.
You know, I think we spent a lot of time talking about the finale, and that I think is going to hold up in my top as well. But I do want to talk about, and I have to think of the name of the episode here. I don't know if it's one of my favorite or one of my least favorite, and that's what makes it so fun to talk about. Is so I know it's not really called "Quickly Change My Diaper." It's called "Partners" from season 4, episode 5.
Yes, yes.
Where Silvermane is now a baby. And they need to get some DNA from Scorpion and Vulture, who are living together like the odd couple.
Yes, yes.
To get Silvermane to no longer be a baby, as you do. One of the characters is just bound into a door jam watching infomercials. The other one's trying to raise more than $500 for his wedding and a baby Silvermane, all in the same episode. So was it one of my favorite or one of the worst? Yes. Yes, it was.
I'll tell you.
I'll never forget it, Jason. I'll never forget it.
It was the only episode of this series that my wife watched with me. So
that's
like,
right.
Imagine her experience. This is the only episode of this series she's ever seen. She's like, you talk about this every week?
You spend 45 minutes every week talking about this? Well, and I remember a little behind the scenes look at not only of your wife watching, which is hilarious, but uh-huh. You somehow went ahead of me and I sent you notes for this episode and you were reading going, what is Brian talking about? Because right. You were an episode ahead.
I had
so you
skipped
were like,
ahead by mistake.
Right.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And you were like, did Brian have a fever dream? And he's talking about a baby Silvermane. And it's the only episode where I really was like, dear listener, strap in and watch this episode and then listen to this because it's banana times.
It was nuts. It was nuts. Yes. Oh God. And I'm going to have to go back and watch that again.
I'll never forget it. As long as I live as a Spider-Man fan, Jason, this will quickly change my diaper. And doesn't he say something like how sick he is of baby food or something, like how tired he's grown of having to eat baby food? But he says it in like this, and they hired like a 6-year-old actor to say these lines. Oh, it worked so well.
It was
terrific. Or it didn't work at all. I just can't tell. Like, you know, it's either an amazing achievement or a big, big pile of failure. But either way, I loved every second.
Emphatically entertaining, if nothing else.
It was. I think it might be the only one through this project that I watched twice.
Oh, God. Terrific. That's terrific.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I don't know, man. You know, I think at the end of the day, there's really no doubt that this is the strongest of the three series we've seen so far. And
agreed.
You know, there were moments in each of the previous ones, and you mentioned, you know, the huge nostalgia hit we got from watching Amazing Friends, and nothing will ever take that away. But you know, I know you had watched some of this series before mm-hmm. we went and started on it. But for me, this is my first time through with this, and I absolutely can see why it's sort of held up as the gold standard. Even if there's stuff to come that is maybe, you know, better or, you know, more nuanced or, you know, just feels more
polished.
This is a significant turning point for telling Spider-Man stories.
Yeah,
regardless.
I agree.
Yeah.
Could you give it a Radioactive Spider rating? The whole series?
The whole series. Give the whole series a Radioactive Spider rating.
Not to put you on the spot at all.
I think you have to let me split hairs a little bit
narrower. I'll let you do a quarter.
I'll do 4.25. I'll do 4.25 Radioactive Spiders. Yeah. Yeah.
I'll just do 4 mm-hmm. Because I really loved it, but there were things that frustrated me, and you know, we can't talk about this series in 2024 without mentioning the somewhat, I believe the technical term is crappy computer animation.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That mm-hmm. that was that's kind of hard to see past now. But I mean, compare if we would have done the same thing with Spider-Man and Amazing Friends, I think it would have been at best a 3 or maybe a 3.5
mm-hmm.
Radioactive mm-hmm. Spider. So
yeah.
What are we doing next, Jason? What do you want to talk about next? I mean, let's keep going, right? The podcast rolls on.
Yeah.
Right?
No, we're up on the horizon is, you know, this is This was Spider-Man the Animated Series.
Yep.
Spider-Man the New Animated Series is going to be the next thing that we look at. And that's...
With Neil Patrick Harris.
Yes, yeah. Yes. This is a show that originally aired on MTV.
So strange. Yeah.
Really strange. I mean, yeah, definitely strange. That one is a contemporary of the Sam Raimi movies and sort of branches off from the first one of those. So really different tonally, you know, I mean, the TV rating is, I think it might be a TV-14 or something like that. Like it's,
yeah,
you know, it's okay. it's a little bit more mature.
Yeah.
But only 13 episodes. It was a very short single season. And if you felt like the computer animation was something in Spidey 94, buckle up, because it's all CG in the new animated series. You know, we'll comment on that as well. I mean, we've always got plenty to say, Brian. I don't think we've ever struggled, except for an episode or two, to have things to say. So
you mentioned the Sam Raimi universe, which is its own, you know, sort of Spidey universe. So we also thought, and I'm excited for this, with our friends from the Shallow Cinema podcast, who will be joining us next time you hear us, folks, listen to their podcast, All About Film. Great, great podcast. But they're going to be joining us next week just to talk about Spider-Man 2001, right?
2002.
Sam Raimi, 2002, the Sam Raimi film, starring a young Brian Siebers. You can see him very... very briefly in that movie. Started this whole thing, folks. I haven't watched this movie in a very long time, so I'm excited to rewatch it.
Been a while since I've looked at that one too. Yeah. Absolutely. No, that I'm absolutely looking forward to that, and that's going to be a great kickoff to move into the next series. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Thanks for talking over the whole show here with us, Brian. I think it's going to be very satisfying for the listener to cleanse the palate and be able to shuttle this one off. So
yeah, and we hope that you enjoyed doing it, and we look forward to the next chapter. And always my pleasure, Jason. Thanks for listening to Spider-Man and His Amazing Fans. Please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite app.
Follow us on Instagram at Spidey's Amazing Fans,
and reach us by email, SpideyFansPodcast@gmail.com.
Our cover art was created by Rob Momartz. Follow him on Instagram to see his latest work. We know you've got a lot of choices in animated Spider-Man podcasts, so thanks for spending this time with us.
Most importantly, if you enjoyed it, share with a friend.